Okay, good morning. We'll get started. My name's Terrence Whalen. I'm Citi's semi-cap equipment analyst. It's a pleasure to have Applied Materials here today. With us speaking for Applied Materials is Bob Halliday, CFO. The format that we have today is a fireside chat format. I'll make sure to allow plenty of time for audience questions as well. Maybe if we can kick it off, Bob, welcome.
Thanks.
So let's see. I think there's some interesting inflections going on in both the foundry space and the memory space. And they play to AMAT's strength in certain ways that are different than other competitors of yours. Wanted to just hear your view on how well-positioned you are for both the memory technology inflection you see and the foundry technology inflection.
Yeah, that's a good question. I think there's probably more technology inflections going on right now than in years. If you look at it for years, customers, memory and foundry and logic, they continue to follow the roadmap primarily by shrinking in two dimensions, a plane of shrink. So they just make smaller and smaller devices, including the gates. They're running out of steam in that in terms of technology and commercially. So the way to relieve that pressure to a certain large extent is to go vertically, go into a third dimension. So if you look at logic devices, what they're doing is going into things called FinFETs, where the FET is like the fin is like the fin on a fish in vertical. And what the going vertical in logic does, it gives you more surface area so you can do contacting and device performance better. You don't have leakage problems and things because the heart of the device is plain and you have a gate, you get all sorts of leakage problems. Leakage of drive current, so you don't have as good a speed of device, but also leakage of power, so your battery dies. These are really big things as you think about more mobile devices because the battery dies, it gets hot, or your speed of your device is bad. So leakage control is a really big deal. And you're running out of tools to manage it by going into two dimensions. But going to third dimension relieves that pressure. Now, what they're going to do in logic is they're going to go to FinFETs, which Intel has already done, and TSMC and Samsung in particular have aggressive roadmaps to achieve. That technology, if you look at the devices for FinFETs, is very powerful in terms of both power consumption and processing speed. Now, that's also very powerful for a company like Applied Materials because if you look at how they make those fins, some of the tools that they buy extensively are things like our EPI tool, epitaxial growth, because to grow on the side of a fin, especially things like contacting, you use tools like EPI. Now, the thing that's really good for us is our share in EPI is very, very high. Our differentiation is high. And the tool, because you're growing one layer at a time, it's a slow process, so you buy a lot of tools. So the inflection to go vertical is an overwhelming need because you can't shrink laterally, as I said. And that's very good for Applied because as you start to do vertical devices, things like EPI and PVD, which came in at 28 and 20 nanometer for metal gates, which again reduces contact resistance and increases performance of the device, that's very good for us too. So this vertical inflection is very good. Now, if you think how they're going to continue the roadmap on fins, they'll probably go taller and narrower. But then to continue the roadmap, they'll go to alternate materials because if you relieve some of your roadmap pressure by going vertical to give you the surface area. The other way you can relieve your pressure is to go to different materials that are either more conductive or more resistive, generally more conductive. That deposition and etch of new materials plays very well to us. We're the world leader in depositing different types of material. So if you think about going 3-5 materials, which are those materials on your table of elements in the third and the fifth column, that's very powerful for us too. And that's probably the next step after getting taller that they'll follow. So the whole FinFET roadmap is good for us. And at fins at 20 nanometer, 14, 16, 20, and early 28s, that's sort of like a 35% growth in our TAM, particularly around PVD and EPI. The other thing that's kind of interesting in there is if you look at the films they're putting down, they're thinner films, quality isn't as good. One of the ways they might treat those films to make them better is to harden them by heating them. and that's RTP, which we very strong share in too. So these inflections in logic are good for us. If you go to VNAND, there's another really impressive trend going on where NAND had been going shrinking planarly, and they're going to go to VNAND, where they have multiple layers. They can go to any number of layers they have. Speculation is they'll go to 32 layers initially, and then they can scale to 64. This NAND inflection to VNAND is very good for customers and also users of NAND devices for a couple of reasons. One, the technology challenge of continuing to shrink in two dimensions, as I said, is similar to FinFET. It's probably worse than NAND, because if you look at how they make NAND devices, they go to multi-level cells, and they're down to about 8 electrons per cell. The devices are not particularly stable down at that level. So, but if you go and you go vertically, you get much more stable devices. And the lithography challenge, if they continue down that roadmap, you'd be looking at doing prospectively 10 nanometer lithography, which is challenging. But if you go to VNAND, it might be 50 nanometer lithography. So that's a lot easier to do. And you can scale vertically. You can go from 32 to 64 pairs, and you start to get cost. So you can increase your megabit growth very cost effectively. So this is technology enabling to follow their roadmap for NAND devices. It's commercially enabling that you can increase your bit growth by scaling vertically very cost effectively. And it is very good for a company like Applied Materials, because instead of being lithography challenged in two dimensions, where you'd have to go to 10 nanometer, which is very expensive and hard, it becomes a challenge of etch and deposition. You're depositing more layers and etching more. These etches tend to be very tall etches, high aspect ratio etches. That plays very well for Applied as a company, because our performance in etch in high aspect ratio is very good, and deposition very good.
Can you kind of put some numbers around what parts of the portfolio this addresses, how large a magnitude inflection this could be for your semi business?
Sure. So in FinFETs, which are logic and foundry, around the fin, we think it's about a 35% growth in our addressable market, TAM. And our share around the fins is very strong. You might say, well, why is Applied share around the fins very strong? A couple of reasons. One, our technology is very good there, where it's epi, PVD, implant, and RTP, which are the predominant etch. The first four, we have very strong share. The etch not as strong around fins. That is the tools that are growing extensively in
and
there.
And what portion of your portfolio is that?
So if you look at our highest share and highest revenue markets, it tends to be PVD, mm-hmm. CVD, implant, RTP, and CMP. So and CMP is growing there too. So it plays very well to where we are strong share and technology enabling. The other good thing about the fins, if you're right down at the transistor level there, they're very risk averse of changing because the process is really tight. It's even tighter than the back end stuff. So the whole thing plays for us in terms of our technology offerings, the growth in the addressable market, and sort of the stickiness of technology around it. That's in the fins.
Okay.
And on VNAND, if you look at this, this could be a growth of 40 to 50% in addressable market because you're putting down all these layers. That's a 32. So if you look at a 100,000 wafer start fab, VNAND, and 32 layers, that's about a $230 to $350 million growth in our addressable market. Percentage-wise, growth in our TAM, I think it's about 30 to 40%.
Okay.
And those technologies tend to be etch, CVD, places like that.
Okay, great. Maybe taking a step back and asking a more qualitative question, maybe just walk us through sort of the evolution of your thinking as you've gotten a closer look internally at Applied Materials over the past year or so, how your thinking has changed specifically around where you have the most salient share gain opportunities.
Sure. So first, the implied question is to talk about semi. I think we had to do a first view of the company and say, what are the markets that are very attractive? That's the first thing you got to do on this stuff, right? So if you look at it, the company has disinvested aggressively in the solar market because the market is not a good market. But I think we've cut spending aggressively there and put it into semi. I think display, we came in display market, and our position in it was actually more attractive than we realized. We're gaining share in display. The display market is growing in terms of the size of the market driven by number of TVs, but also these TVs are a lot bigger. And if you look at cell phones and tablets, those are growing, and there may be technology inflections coming, particularly in the low end, the smaller screen sizes, which play for us and grow our addressable market. So when we looked at markets, solar, tough market, disinvest. Display, pretty good market, strong position, gaining share, technology inflections play for us. We kind of like display better than we realized because we didn't know the display market as well. Within semi, which I think is sort of your implicit first question, the big TAMs we didn't play were etch and inspection. When we looked at those products, our inspection product was a pretty good product, actually. But the qualification of it at the fabs, we need to put resources in. So we put resources into qualifying more layers at the fab and thus being able to sell more tools. And we're making pretty good progress on that. Etch was the other big addressable market. Now, in etch, historically, we were pretty good in memory, not quite as good on foundry and logic. So what we're doing this year is we spent a lot of time going through the qualification process on foundry and logic and making pretty good progress. Not finalized yet, I'd say, making good progress. And then we think we're gaining share, particularly in memory, where some of these technology inflections and rapid product introductions we're doing are helping us. So I think those are the big markets we focused on.
And so from a very high level, do you think you're well balanced between memory and foundry in terms of capturing the opportunity in terms of the 3D inflections for both, or are you much stronger in one than the other?
That's a good question. I don't think you ever feel you're as well positioned as you like. You're always running on the treadmill. So I think if we have a bunch of products in the pipeline that are pretty disruptive. Etch, deposition, CVD, and PVD areas. Those products should bode well for us in both markets. I think the bigger market in the next year or so is probably foundry will continue to be big and logic. Foundry and logic are similar. I think the biggest growth next year is probably NAND in terms of growth. But I think we're probably pretty well positioned in both. I think the share gains are a little bit easier to do sometimes in memory.
Okay. And then if you could quickly remind us what your WFE view is of 13 and any initial 14 thoughts.
Sure. We've been
both maybe magnitude and mix.
Sure. So on 13, we've been pretty steady. I think we're down 5 to 10% from 12. Next year, we're up 10 to 20. If you look at 13, it's been a big foundry year, most heavily concentrated with the big Taiwanese foundry. It was a little bit heavier at the beginning of the year when they were ramping 28 nanometer production buys. Now it's a little smaller in 28, and they're getting ready for 20 nanometer buys towards the end of the year, some now, right? And so foundry intensive year, concentrated there. I think segueing foundry into 2014 looks like a pretty good year. Might be spread out a little bit more. I think the rate of change into next year will be determined more in the second half of the year, is my guess. I think the rate of change in foundry spending will be determined by the technology transitions. You know, FinFETs are ready, whether it's at foundry, whether it's at TSMC or Samsung. I think there'll be a lot of pull for FinFETs. If FinFETs are late, then you could get a longer tail on 28 and 20 nanometer. So I think the technology inflection drives what they spend and when. My guess is foundry next year is pretty good with a positive bias, which might be realized in the second half.
Second half, okay.
In terms of NAND, I think it's up a bunch next year. I think it's planar and VNAND. You can see some greenfield fabs out there that are pretty big, Samsung, Toshiba, places like that. I think Micron will spend, some of it will be DRAM technology spending, technology refresh stuff at Elpida.
Sure.
So next year's spending, foundry pretty good, bigger growth, rate of growth in NAND, DRAM pretty good, but more technology refresh weighted versus NAND is more greenfield.
Yes, okay. You guys have obviously been doing a lot of work since you've come from Varian. You had an analyst day recently. Can you just maybe touch on the high-level aspects of your expectations for gross margin improvement, operating margin, the earnings power model?
Sure. We had an analyst day July 8th, and we put up 2016 models. We put a few up and sort of centered around a wafer fab equipment in 2016 at $37 billion. And a couple points away from a share of overall wafer fab equipment for Applied. I think we said we were up to like 19.9%, and last year we were around 17.9 or something like that. So two full points. And then we showed gross margin improvement and tight expense management. So if you look at the pieces that go in that, on the expenses, I think we've done a pretty good job of bringing spending down and moving money to R&D. So I think on expenses, we're making pretty good progress to that roadmap on the P&L. I think on revenue, we're doing tactical things right now to gain share. You know, qualifying the existing tools, having strong customer relationships. The sustainable share gains will be more qualification of existing tools and more tools coming out of the pipeline. So if you look at it, we have a bunch of products in the pipeline that look very disruptive, which start to come out next year. Those tools look well positioned to drive the share gains on the top line. I think customers are welcoming them. We're doing a lot of evaluations, which are early signals. The question is, you got to hit the window, the time window and the process window. Right now, I think we will. That will drive both the revenue and the gross margin. The other component of gross margin and profitability is the service business and cost of goods sold management. I think we have an opportunity to drive down cost of goods sold with sourcing and overhead reduction. That started. I think that will continue over the next 2.5 years. I can see a roadmap that happens. Manufacturing reports to me now, so I got to work on it, right?
Okay.
But I can see that. So I think most of the lines of the P&L, tax and share count, I think makes sense too. I think, going from the P&L up, share count, tax, operating expenses all look like they're in line. Gross margin, cost reduction and cost of goods sold is going. And then the real driver of the revenue line will be the share gains with new products over the next couple of years. I think we're on the path.
How confident can you be in the gross margin expansion plan given, you know, continued concentration of spending at the customer level?
Yeah, there's three big things that will be this. Mix the drinks on gross margins. One will be, do you have disruptive products? That's the big hitter, because if you have good products, it works out pretty well for you. And that's the stuff, some of the stuff we have is very disruptive. Now, if you look at where we have high share, whether it's Epi or PVD or places like that, we tend to have pretty good gross margins, and it's because we have very strong product offerings. So if you incrementally get stronger product offerings, and some of those TAMs are growing disproportionately too,
right,
like Epi, then that's good for our gross margin mix.
What's the timing like on that? Because obviously we saw just this most recent quarter that you reported 3 weeks ago, we saw a pretty radical shift down in SG&A and up in R&D. What's the timeline and how predictable are the returns on that in terms of getting the new products to hit?
Yeah, I think they're going to come out of the pipe. Most of them are going to start hitting. So if you look at what we gave you a leading indicator on the call, was that our evaluation volume of tools is up something like next quarter or the quarter after, like 30%. So we have customers taking these tools. So if you want to do early indicators, the financial statements are lagging indicators. A leading indicator of the financials is market share indicates revenue and headcount indicates expenses. The leading indicator of market share is D2R, design tool record. The leading indicator of design tool record is eval tools. And the leading indicator of that is we've got the right products. So we've got the right products coming out of the pipe, I think. We're getting the eval tools in, and the customer pull is pretty good. So those are symptomatic that we're going to do pretty well. But, you know, we have to go through the process. So towards the end of next year, we'll know, next 9 to 12 months, we'll know a lot more.
I think you had mentioned, the FinFET opportunity to us was one of the more attractive elements to the story around foundry spending because of the game theory involved between Intel, Samsung, and TSMC, and the confidence that gives us to then sort of that tightening and delivering a pretty intense spending cycle. One of the messages that you provided at your analyst day was more around the progress you had made in the memory market with vertical NAND. You talked a little bit about wins that you had secured for design tool of record. And I think, alternatively, I think Lam the following day talked about having a confident position in the production tool of record. Investors, I think, are looking for a little bit of clarification of the phases of deployment of vertical NAND and where you believe you might actually have more of an opportunity to take share.
Sure. I think, so the debate has been, I think etch was the big focus. In 2013, I think we're going to gain share in etch, and I think we're going to gain share in NAND, V-NAND and planar. I think we'll be well positioned in some of the big expansions you're talking about.
In terms of the timing that you see from a customer perspective between, let's say, an initial proto line and then a larger commercial deployment, what are you seeing in terms of how that's developing into next year? You mentioned, I think, on Foundry that you think it's a little bit more second half than first half for the real strength in capacity spending. Is that the same for the NAND market as well?
Yeah, let me clarify what I meant to say on Foundry. I actually think the first half is pretty strong on Foundry spending, as it has been the last few years, because of sort of seasonality,
okay.
Get ready for Christmas.
Sure.
So I actually think Foundry's strong spending in the first half.
Okay.
What I said is the ups. So I would guess most people think next year is flattish up a little bit on Foundry, first half weighted. I think the first half weighted, the opportunity versus Foundry, I think, is beating the flattish up a little bit would be second half.
Okay.
But I think you got a strong first half where the upside is more second half,
okay.
Is
understood.
My guess.
Sure.
In terms of the build out on memory, I think some of the NAND stuff you're going to see, you're going to see production and revenue buys the end of this calendar year, early the next calendar year. And then I think you're going to see a build out of NAND pretty much throughout next year. The big Samsung factory in China is, eventually going to be, I think, over 220,000 wafer starts, some of it at the end of this year and throughout next year and into the following year.
Okay.
Toshiba great. Will build out, too.
Okay, excellent. I just want to make sure that we give the audience an opportunity to ask questions, so why don't we pull around, and I'd ask that you wait for the mic if you have a question.
My cousin in the back has a question.
I think I might have just missed it. You started talking about the three determinants of your gross margin progression, and we got the disruptive products, but what were the other two?
Yeah, I know. We sort of switched gears on you. The three were the disruptive products really drive the bus. They're a little bit time sequenced. The other one is tactical stuff on cost reduction, which is happening, right? And the third one is how much price pressure you succumb to with customers, right? And the biggest driver of that one is how strong is your product position. My guess is we will get cost reduction. My guess is the price pressure from customers will end up being mixed, moderate. So the tiebreaker will probably be the disruptive products.
Just a little different question. Could you comment on your balance sheet? Do you feel it's well situated? Do you have enough cash on there for the next few years, or would you go to market for any reason?
Sure. The balance sheet, the working capital stuff, we manage pretty well. CapEx is not too big for our industry. Cash balance is around $3 billion now. Most of it's in the U.S., where we're free to use it for dividends or buybacks. Our industry, including Applied, tends to be pretty good cash generators because no CapEx to be issued. We're mostly a working capital issue industry where we ramp up on inventory and receivables. I don't see us doing too much financing.
So let's see, I have a number of questions here. In terms of share gain specifically, can you walk us through where you see, again, sort of the most opportunity and where the timing is on gains in particularly Etch?
I think the qualification process on Foundry and Etch has made really good progress this year, some incremental sales. I think the bigger share gain opportunities for us this year and next in Etch tend to be more memory related.
Okay.
Flash more, because Flash is spending more. If you look at Flash and DRAM spending, they're a little bit different. I think I touched on this earlier today. Flash is more greenfield, more Etch-centric, more capacity buys related to greenfield. DRAM is more technology buys, probably a little bit, my guess is a little bit more weighted towards lithography stuff, right? So the opportunity for guys like us tends to be more on NAND, and that's where we're realizing it. So I think we'll gain share in Etch in memory, particularly in NAND this year and next.
Okay, great. And then kind of switching gears here, one of the big updates from the earnings call was the transition between Gary Dickerson to CEO and Mike Splinter stepping out from that role. What's the significance of that in terms of the company's approach to the solar business in particular?
Sure, I'll talk about generally. First, the transition's been going on for about 14, 15 months. Gary became president in June of 12. I think it's actually been a really good transition. Mike's been very supportive. Gary's run the products, which is the solar products, semi, display, and services. Mike has had people reporting to, like me, the CFO, legal, and all the functional things, manufacturing, HR, IT. So now everything reports to Gary. So I think it's been a pretty smooth transition. I think what the primary thing is, the company has continued to pick up velocity over the last year in terms of execution, speed, redeployment of assets, the pace of the change is picking up. I think the velocity will continue to pick up. Gary's got me in meetings every weekend, so I assume it's picking up. And so I think the velocity will be pick up. In terms of the specific question on solar, I think we take a very dispassionate, analytical view of the markets. I think we have some interesting technology in solar. I think the market's tough, right? I mean, when you have a tough market, what are you going to do? You can execute like crazy, and the market's tough for a couple of reasons. One, we sell equipment into the solar manufacturers. Solar manufacturers bought way too much equipment back in 2011. They bought probably 3 or 4 years worth of equipment. So if you look at these speculations, they don't need to buy a lot of capacity, equipment for more capacity until, I don't know, 14, maybe 15 even, in terms of volume. And then the question is, how big a market is it? Because the semiconductor market, you have big capacity additions, but big technology spending too. You don't have that same level of technology spending in solar. There's only, you might have hundreds of process steps in semi, and solar you might have 25, right? So the solar market, I think, is tougher in terms of spending because, one, they got too much capacity. Two, they don't have the underpinnings to drive huge spending unless it really takes off. They need a lot of capacity. And some of that they get naturally by going up the efficiency curve. So I think solar is a tougher market. I think we will be very, very judicious in what we do there. We've disinvested aggressively so far, and I think we'll continue to be very, very careful there.
Okay, terrific. Another question I had is on what you're seeing in terms of tool reuse very broadly in the industry, and is that a risk or is it an opportunity for you?
Yeah, it's been an ongoing theme for years. So if you look at the biggest logic manufacturer in the world, they don't add a lot of greenfield production, so they do a lot of tool reuse and they're pretty adept at it, right? If you look at memory and foundry the last while, they've been adding volumes of capacity, so it's greenfield stuff. If you look at tool reuse, wherever they can, they use tool reuse, but the two things that gate that are, one, is it capacity adds, and two, is it new technology? So as we talked earlier, some of these new technologies like FinFETs and V-NAND, you have a different mix of tools. So you get more epi tools, you get more etch tools, you get more CVD tools. So it's harder to do the tool reuse there. That's a little bit why I differentiate between NAND and DRAM. DRAM is not adding a lot of capacity. They're adding more technology buys. Greenfield is more capacity in. It plays the tool change in tools. Both play to us.
Okay.
So I think tool reuse is an ongoing phenomenon, but it's not new.
Okay. And at Semicon West, I think both you and some competitors talked a little bit about the used tool market.
Yeah.
That's something that I think a lot of generalists and investors aren't too aware of. So if you could just give us an update on how significant and, you know, if that's an opportunity or risk to the greenfield business.
Yeah, that's a good question. I actually think that's kind of an interesting one. The tool reuse market, the tool used tool market isn't too big right now. People became very concerned about around 2009 when overall CapEx wasn't too big and PowerShift, ProMOS were struggling, right? And there was a bunch of used tools on the market. Right now, it's a moderate size. I think it's interesting for a couple levels. One, a lot of the used tools are 200-millimeter tools, and someday those folks are going to go to, and a lot of it's around analog and CIS devices,
right,
too.
Right.
So someday those folks are going to go to 300-millimeter size wafers. So you kind of want to control those accounts. So rather than having those used tools pass through used tool vendors, you'd rather have it pass through yourself because, one, you have account relationships. Two, you have a greater possibility of having spare parts sales. I think one of the themes we haven't touched on today, which is kind of interesting, you guys particularly want to look at this one, is the aftermarket business in the semi industry is very, very powerful. The present value at the appropriate discount rate of cash flows from this aftermarket are probably north of the equipment sale itself, if you figure it out. So that this plays a little bit to the used tool thing, too, because if you control that market, you have a great probability of getting the spare parts sales, too. So there's three reasons you want to do it. One, you get some sales of the equipment. Two, you get the aftermarket, a greater probability of getting the aftermarket business. Three, when they upgrade to 300-millimeter fab someday, you're the vendor of choice. So I think the used tool market is actually a little bit more of an opportunity than a threat at this time.
Okay, terrific. Just wanted to check in again to see if we have questions here.
Could you just give us your thoughts on capital allocation priorities and specifically where M&A fits into that?
Sure. Right now, as I said earlier, we got about $3 billion in cash, and that's kind of what we need. So we increased the dividend just this quarter, past quarter, I think it was the first time. We've increased the last couple of years. So I think the yield on the dividend is about 2.5%, which is pretty good for our industry. The buyback, we've continued to aggressively buy back stock. We bought a whole pile of it at the end of 2012. And we've been buying back stock the last two quarters. So we're pretty good about returning cash to investors. In terms of M&A, we don't specifically ever talk about M&A stuff. I don't see cash playing into that too much as a factor, frankly. I think the repatriation of cash to investors is a priority for the company, and we'll have a mix of those vehicles, and I don't see the cash as too predictive of that one way or the other.
Would M&A be considered only for semi or for other businesses like display?
I think we're open-minded on everything. It's really, do you have a good opportunity? So I think we're open-minded on everything, but the markets we're in tend to be ones we know better.
And as you've gone through your product review the past year, you know, are there any glaring holes in the portfolio, or do you feel pretty comfortable that they would just be tuck-in acquisitions then?
I think our core products in display and semi are pretty darn good.
Okay.
There's certain places where we're trying to get stronger organically. We talked about etch and inspection. Other acquisitions of technology, it's always possible, but we don't foreshadow it too much.
Okay, sure. One other question I had was sort of a little bit of a higher level qualitative question. Varian was really a one product company from a very high level. AMAT obviously is much more complex. How does that shift the challenge of your job, and how has that experience been for you the past year?
Yeah, I actually I actually kind of bridged into Applied in a fortuitous manner. I mean, if you look at my experience, I was the CFO at Varian, but I was also responsible for manufacturing, supply chain, and HR, legal, IT, all the internal stuff pretty much. So, and I had one finance guy drove finance for me, and I drove a lot. I worked a lot on the operations stuff and the strategy stuff. I enjoyed it a lot. And then when I became part of Applied, I became the general manager of Varian from November of 11, effectively May of 11, really. And I got more into the R&D customer stuff and marketing stuff, right? So I was visiting customers a lot. And I'd always got into the technology side a reasonable amount, but I got into it deeper. So from, you know, somewhere in 11 till, you know, a few months, 6 months ago, I was pretty deep into the technology of Varian, but engaging with the technology guys and the product management guys at Applied. So I was a peer of the Etch guy and the CVD guy, PVD guy working for Randir, who runs SSG. So I started to know the people and the products pretty well at Applied. So I think the transition worked pretty well for me. I think in terms of future transitions, the way you make money, if you really dumb things down, we are the epitome of a product-driven company, right? We have really smart customers, just a few of them. The best product wins. And so driving the products is a big deal. So if I want to create value for shareholders, it isn't anything I do on negotiation of pricing terms this week. It's do we allocate our money internally to the right markets, semi and display we like right now, and within that, do we allocate it to the right products, and do we have a rigorous process for doing the resource allocation and making sure those products are being executed correctly? So I spend a disproportionate amount of my time at the front end of that stuff because that's where the money is. Because, you know, the stuff I do today will impact revenues and gross margins. The company does today will impact revenues and gross margins, you know, in the next couple of years. If I don't pay attention to that stuff now, it doesn't matter what I talk to you about in a conference 2 years from now. Because the customers are so big, if you don't get the right products, that's the problem. So we spend a lot of time on that.
And how has the response been to that?
Pretty good. I mean,
In terms of turnover, obviously, you know, a pretty strong cultural shift going on. Are we through that initial adjustment phase? Are things stabilizing and really getting going in that process?
I'd say it's pretty good. The product people have been pretty happy, I'd say, the last 15, 20 months, because we're investing in the products. We're going to a lot of review meetings, so they see our obvious interest and drive on the products, Gary, myself, Randir, everyone. So the product-focused people, I think, are pretty darn happy in terms of pace, investment, focus. I think the support people are very supportive because the biggest thing in life, so there's three things while you work at a company, right? One, people love to win. You know, winning is a big, big deal, right? And I think people are feeling we can win. We can really win. That's a big deal. The second thing, you know, you do interesting things. I mean, that's the second thing you like in the company. Well, the stuff we do is really interesting, right? Technologically, intellectually challenging. So if you look at that, there's actually a flow of talent to the company right now, which is pretty powerful. So I think we can win, and I think people are excited about it. I think the support organizations, we've been a little bit tougher on spending. So the product guys are pretty happy. The technology guys, the technical market guys are pretty happy because a lot of focus on them. The support functions, a little bit harder task to row to hoe because we're cutting costs there, but I think they really like the we can win part. So the vision of the company they like.
Time for one question. Thanks.
Can you talk about opportunities on the back end, advanced packaging, how the semi-tool business, what's happened there? And the consortium of companies that they have put together?
Yeah, the packaging stuff, you know, I'm new to this, but, you know, for years it's been voiced as a pretty good opportunity that hasn't really been realized. I think it's still a pretty good opportunity that needs to be realized. If you look at Semitool, they have some products in development that might be incrementally positive there. I would say it's an opportunity that still needs to be realized, to be honest with you.
Okay, well, that concludes our session. Thank you so much, Bob.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks.
Enjoyed it.